Welcome to Health Stealth Radio, where we move away from the mundane to gather insights from the shadows. From the shadows of enterprise and patient cybersecurity. Yes, we surely believe that traditional themes like endpoint software and zero trust are critical, but given massive advances in AI, remote and wearable device hacking, and data hostage negotiators, there's a much darker side to cybersecurity, and not everyone is quite willing to talk about it in public. Health Stealth Radio will thrive on these topics and encourage fireside spats to debate them. Here's your host, Frank Catita.
Hi, this is Frank Catita. Thank you for joining us. This is Health Stealth Radio, broadcasting from the shadows of patient and enterprise cybersecurity. We're broadcasting on Healthcare Now Radio and Chime's Digital Health Insights Studios. So we'd like to welcome you today. I'm very excited because I have a good personal friend and a colleague from years gone by, Maria Palombini, who happens to be the lead for the IEEE Healthcare and Life Sciences Practice. Maria has done some amazing stuff over the years. We worked together a lot on artificial intelligence in its infancy, now on cybersecurity. So what I'd like Maria to do is to introduce herself, tell us what she does in a typical day in the life of Maria. And we always like to get a little bit of work and life balance into the introduction. So if you could, Maria, could you tell us what you like to do with your time off?
Sure. So, Frank, first of all, it's always nice to be with you. And I'm hoping that your listeners are going to enjoy our conversation because I always enjoyed our conversations, no matter what we were talking about. So this is awesome. So, yeah, so I lead the Global Healthcare and Life Science Practice at the IEEE Standards Association. This is my work. And I'm very passionate about it because it touches on something that I'm personally driven about, which is really figuring out how do we best help patients. But for when I'm not working and enough focused on my passions around work, I kind of like just enjoying some time with my dogs. You know, I have my pups. I take my fur babies. I take them out and enjoy spending some time going walking. Love to travel, love to see historical sites. I think there's so much in history that keeps repeating itself. But if you're not a lover of history, you kind of don't know. So when you see things happening and you go through this historical sense, you're like, wow, this sort of happened somehow 500 years ago and we're reliving it again in a different way. So I kind of like looking at these kinds of situations and reading about them and obviously visiting them. You really appreciate, you know, humanity in a totally different lens.
That's great.
Those are kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. That's great. We bring this up a lot because, you know, one of the focal points of burnout tends to be CISOs, security officers, right now, because it's 24/7. There's always a threat coming. So we like to know what those people that are involved in cybersecurity do to get away from that stress and burnout. So my first question is really related to the fact that people like myself and many of our listeners, and surely people that aren't involved in healthcare professionally, are victims of watching streaming video and espionage shows and seeing what's happening out there with somebody has their pacemaker hacked by bad actors. So I'm sort of curious that, you know, a lot of the work you're doing right now is related to medical devices, and in the world of reality as opposed to 1 hour segments, where are you seeing the risk right now? What's happening in medical devices? Because it sounds to the layman, or even if you're in healthcare, is being pretty scary.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously, as we move more toward this idea of remote patient monitoring, right, the hospital at home, healthcare consumerism, the ability to have something on you monitoring that engagement, all those great things, right? These are all great things. It's just really just created more opportunity and vulnerabilities, specifically around security, privacy of data, data governance. You know, these devices, unfortunately, are not all perfectly designed for all these kinds of security vulnerabilities. Now, we don't look at just the device in itself, which is the source, right? That's the capture of the data. You have to look at the data journey. It goes from the device, it goes through, quote unquote, the internet. It stops off in one journey. It could go into multiple cloud storage solutions. Every point of that journey is vulnerable. Plain and simple. So when you think about bad actors, right, we hear sometimes that people hack somebody's device. you know, let's put that small population of people who like to be challenged, say, oh, I can hack somebody's pacemaker and break into the biggest healthcare system and stop it. I mean, like, that's like some sick thrill, right? We talk about people who do that, right? But there are people, you know, let's be honest, it's the data, right? That's what's driving the bad behavior is the data, the amount of immutable health data that can be accessible through those devices and through that journey is the most appetizing part. And so bad actors are just financially motivated because they sell that data and it's highly profitable for them to do it. And that's unfortunately the reality of the situation. And to be quite honest, we all know this, there is no perfect vaccine for these security vulnerabilities, right? There's no 100% way to safeguard this data. Like, no one has yet to been able to develop that.
So on the price scale, is there some data that's more valuable than others that you've seen?
Yeah, so you know, at one time it was all about, you know, the financial data, right? Your social security number, your credit card, whatever. That's like nothing now. That's like super pedestrian because all those things could be changed. They hack your credit card, you change your credit card, boom, done. When they hack your iris scan, like, you can't get a new set of iris scans. Like, that's it. It's immutable. It's your genetic data.
I got it. Okay.
So, right? So the more immutable it is, the more lucrative it is. It's plain and simple. And it's unfortunate. But that's the reality. And this goes across your entire health profile, right? Your DNA, anything you can't change about your human disposition, it's immutable. They're going to want to get it.
That's fascinating. That's fascinating. I never thought about the iris scans, but the ability to clone that and copy it and reuse it over and over again. Again, there's no protecting against it, I guess, other than wearing
Yeah.
shades.
Right, but that's you know, welcome to clear, you know, all these other things that are
Yeah,
asking
no, just
for, I mean, you
raises
know. Yeah.
how do I raise a lot of questions of how, I mean, you said it's the human, and it's even more the human. It's the human anatomy now. It's not just the human, a fishing expedition where they're entering information that is in a phishing attack. So are there some specialties that you find where this is happening more than others? Medical specialties, healthcare specialties?
It's about healthcare specialties. I think it's about where that you. So if you look at the more rare the data and like more genetically, you know, immutable, there you go. But also, you also have to look at device areas where there's obviously the more proliferation of devices. So when you think about chronic conditions, right, the more patients who have X diseases sometimes, the more data you're going to have access to because there's more devices, more digital therapeutics, more that kind of thing. So I really don't think it's about a particular disease. I just think about where they can get their money really out of the data and be able to use it for whatever their needs are. And it's unfortunate because, you know, there's this, it's like this dark side of such a benefit to humanity that we have to combat at all levels, right? This is not a one person problem. This is not a policy problem. This is not exclusively a manufacturer's problem. This is not a standards development organization's problem. It's like all these key players have to work together to best safeguard these important tools.
So I put on some equity conferences, and I hear from the speakers there that certain social determinants of health have a direct correlation to the risk and the ability to be hacked. Would you say that that's valid, that there's an equity issue as it relates to cybersecurity?
So I think from a point of view, cybersecurity-wise, we're all equally vulnerable, right? I don't care how digitally literate you are, you know, you could even be designing cybersecurity tools and technologies. We're all equally vulnerable. What's happening is with individuals who are unfortunately either in lower economic communities or have been marginalized or just haven't had the same level of digital literacy, they're more vulnerable because they're less likely to be thinking twice about certain things, or they're not really educated on how best to just even from where human error happens, like how to best safeguard themselves and try like to hide their phone or use passwords that are not so easily, you know, easily hacked and kinds of things. And that's just because of their lack of experience and exposure to the insanity that we've all been living in developed economies. So I think that just makes them naturally more vulnerable because they just haven't had the experience or they don't have the education and like, you know, the help to be a little bit more, you know, understanding of what's really going on there. And think about it for the first time, sometimes for them, you know, especially when we see a lot of these projects around individuals around rural areas or who are not in, you know, these urban environments, right? They're being told, hey, try this wearable because they're part of a pilot, right? And they put it on and it's like, okay, and then like collecting data about them, but they're not really clear like exactly what's going on. Like the person is not thinking about the data, right? They're thinking about, for the first time, I have access to digital health in some form. Someone's monitoring a chronic condition of mine, right? Or some other issue. So their first point is, I'm thinking about my health, like my physical health, right? But then the reality is that a lot of times these situations, they're actually vulnerable because one, they're unaware, and two, you know, and not to say bad actors or some individuals who don't put a focus on cybersecurity and privacy and these ethical considerations around these technologies sort of exploit those individuals, right? And that becomes the problem. So yeah, in a lot of ways, just as a result of their socioeconomic status, they unfortunately are more vulnerable than the rest of us, which is unfortunate.
That's interesting. So obviously the burden of responsibility for a lot of this is on the manufacturer to protect using hardware techniques and algorithms to protect against these things. But when you look at the layperson, even the digital native, as opposed to the digital immigrant that we were talking about a moment ago, what does the average person do to protect themselves from this? I mean, you know, we all belong to organizations where we have to take the inevitable test at the beginning, that you have to have the phishing test and a cybersecurity test. I teach at a couple of universities, and it gets to be a point where it's like double authentication. It gets absolutely annoying that I have to take the same test, and I could get to the end and fake it. So that's one thing with phishing. Manufacturer protects using hardware and software techniques. People know about phishing tests, but I mean, if I have a Face ID for my phone to get into my credit card account, I mean, how can the average person, or even not the average person, how can even high-tech executives protect themselves from having their face captured or something like that?
I would say don't do it, but that's another conversation. So
don't use it.
I would say your biometrics, again, are the most immutable, right? You can't change that. If it's hacked, it's stolen, that's it. Now, obviously, we all watch these cool like military espionage movies where you use your eye scan to open the door to get into some like military cave and all that other stuff. That's all cool and everything, but the military can be hacked too. It's not like they're like safe, you know, and, like, there is always this vulnerability, this opportunity to be hacked. So I think as an individual, you should choose, right? Like sometimes it's just convenient, right? I'm just going to use this. I can just give my iris scan and I'll get faster through this, or I can do this faster, or I don't have to worry about my fingerprint and all this other stuff, right? That does give you some level of convenience because you don't have to remember a password and type it in and all this other great stuff. But at the same time, you're sacrificing convenience for vulnerability, because now you've made an immutable part of your body, a data point in your body, totally vulnerable to security threat. And that's the reality. And I think as an individual, you have to make that decision. And sometimes you really don't know that. Like you said, not everybody's super educated. You know, the other thing that I find that's a common mistake, and I see it, and I'm not going to lie, sometimes I do this myself. Like, you change your password and you write it down and you leave it on your desk. Now, in my home office, if my dogs eat it, they actually saved me. But at the same time, in your work office, right? Like, if they ate it, I don't have to worry about anybody else seeing it. But like in your work office, anybody could pass by your desk and see that password, right? And even though you just wrote in a post-it note, I'm going to shred it, that 10 minutes, 15 minutes, because it was convenient for you to write it right away, you know, that's right there, a human error. This is no technology error. This is a human error. The reality is we are humans. We do make mistakes, right? And, you know, like I said, you lose track of something, you figure out, write it down real quick, whatever. You can't, you try to be as vigilant as you can, but there, we can't just slow, like, just put it at the feet of one group. Again, like you say, the manufacturers. I think manufacturers or developers have to exhaust every possibility from a technology engineering, you know, perspective to say, we're going to try to safeguard as best as we can. And I think, you know, from a, you know, standards development organization, we are working with them to figure out, okay, how do we standardize this? Because I believe cybersecurity or the vulnerabilities are like the thorn in everybody's side right now. I think not only in healthcare, but in every single industry. So I think everybody's incentivized to figure this out. Like, how do we try to figure this out? But it's not a simple solution. And I think a lot of it has to do with human sort of decision-making, like I said, negotiating that balance between convenience and vulnerability. And also trying to be as vigilant as you can. I mean, we take all these phishing courses for compliance and and I know people who take the courses and then when they go home in their personal world, they don't apply those learnings in their personal. They do it at work, right? So I'm like, isn't it the same thing at home? Like you get all these phishing scams and stuff, but I think people just, sort of they don't carry that sort of vigilance with them at every point of the day. And that's really hard. It's like standing in front of that your house door and like, I'm gonna block this all day long. Like that's not feasible, right? Like you're just not gonna do it. And it's conceptually the same thing.
Yeah. I think if you went into the, there's a little notes app that we have on Apple's here that you write notes. I think if people zeroed in on those, they could probably find every reasonable password that people would have because that is the post-it note. That is the post-it. So it's sort of like the security that you have that I'm going to put my wallet in my sneaker when I'm on the beach and nobody will ever find my wallet and cell phone in my sneaker. So, it's the bad actors know about where the sneaker, what's in the sneaker. So it's a,
Absolutely. They'll go looking through them.
Exactly. So, you're working on that by the nature of your organization, it's very standards driven. And I'm just trying to figure out how someone in your position tries to herd all these medical device company cats to agree on standards. And then there's the enforcement branch on top of that. So tell us a little bit about what IEEE is doing and what your work specifically is doing on medical device standards.
So, from the IEEE perspective, right, the volunteers or the individuals that come to us, they come to us and tell us, this is the problem, right? We already know the problem, but they're like, this is the problem. And we think this might be one way to address it, which could be the development of a standard, right? Which would sort of, equally put everyone like it's on a neutral basis and everybody's equally on the same footing. Meaning if you apply the standard, regardless of the technology or the platform you're using, that kind of thing, the standard will say, okay, we're going to safeguard this, whatever they're developing. From my point of view, leading the healthcare life science global practice, really my work is I look at many different things. I look at cutting edge emerging technologies, and right away I start to cite like, oh man, here comes a huge vulnerability, right? Like something is there, right? Because for every opportunity, there's always a vulnerability around it. Like that's just the nature of anything. So you always have to look at two sides of the coin. But I also look at talk to advocates and experts who are really leading these cutting edge, and I want to say pragmatic, because in everything there's a hype cycle, right? Even cybersecurity is in a hype cycle, if you think about it, right? Now it's like, oh, healthcare executives are pouring more money into cybersecurity now. It's like, okay, well, why? Because we see the number of breaches going through the roof. This is a hype cycle. I think it's a bad one, but it's like it's not good, right? And we see this going on. So what we really need is pragmatic, advocates and people who are looking at the solution, right? Because the reality is that we have to be able to have everybody reach consensus when they're developing standards. They develop the code, the technical documentation together, and then they have to vote, which is how they achieve consensus for this to be driven to the market. And it's really important. So you always find that there's a common thread that these manufacturers, I mean, what manufacturer is going to stand up and say, I really don't care about cybersecurity? I mean, like, who would say that publicly? Like, I mean, like, you can't say something like that. Like, it's just not going to happen, right?
Yeah. No, at the same time, at the same time, people get desensitized because I've been on a couple other programs where I talked about zero trust washing. It's sort of like it was greenwashing. We used to have greenwashing because everything was sustainable. Now we have AI washing. Everything has to have AI in it. And now and all the manufacturers are in cybersecurity are zero trust washing. You can't, it's sort of like Tourette's. You have to just keep on saying it over and over again to make it. So is that, I mean, is that the kind of thing that standardization will come out with is a unified terminology goes beyond washing?
I don't think so. I don't think it's about the terminology. It's about really developing the frameworks. So, there's definitely a lot of great work going on here at the edge, led by these volunteers around the world. So it's funny you mentioned the zero trust one because we just started a industry connections program, and for people not IEEE land, that's really like an incubator program to sort of identify and develop opportunities where potential standards in that particular application could be nurtured and go forward. So sometimes people come to us and like, we have the perfect idea for a standard. We have the group ready to go. We want to, you know, go through the proper procedure to apply for governance to become a standards working group, right? That's one route. And then we have this route where we call this incubator area called Industry Connections Program, which has a lot of adaptability and flexibility. And we actually just started one on zero trust for cybersecurity in healthcare devices and information systems. So perfect example, right? What they're really going to be looking at is like, okay, what are the potential areas can we start looking at where a technical standard with zero trust can address these cybersecurity? And it could be from many different lens. So that's sort of incubation phase, and that just started. Then we have other ones that we've actually published. So one of the big ones, and I think this is really important. So just back to the healthcare, when we talk about IEEE in general, the mission of IEEE, right, our tagline is advancing technology for humanity. Every aspect of the work we do, whether it be standards, you know, exploring technologies, technical conferences, whatever, is always looking through this lens. How can technology help humanity, right? And it could be regardless of a discipline or a domain. So in healthcare, the mission of the healthcare life science practice working with its volunteers is how do we, through the integration of these technologies, right, provide sustainable, equitable, quality access to healthcare with the right to privacy protection, and obviously the right to choose how you want to share your data. So that being said, we're looking at material impact for patients. So we actually have a standard that was published called, I'm going to use IEEE language for a second, 21.2, which is a standard for wireless diabetes device security, right? And there's a whole family of them. And it's information security requirements for connected diabetes solutions. So pretty much this is a framework, right, for, and also an evaluation system, because they're actually building a conformity assessment program, not on IEEE people. That's sort of like, we're going to be able to say we can have a certification, a third party lab audit a device and make sure that the device is using the standard correctly according to the requirements of the standard. It may even look at other things if they're like HIPAA compliant or GDPR, that kind of thing.
That's great.
Why is this important?
That's great.
Because right? Everybody's like, standards are boring.
That's
like,
right. That's my point. It's just you people's eyes
so
plays over.
This is why it's important. Think about this, right? Globally today, there's over 540 million people with diabetes. And that's people in a range of the age of 20 years old to 79 years old. This is globally, right? We're not even talking about children, because children, they can be born with type 1 diabetes, right? And by 2045, they're expecting that number to grow by 46%. So they're talking about 783 million adults will be living with diabetes. This is according to the International Diabetes Foundation, right? What does that mean? Here comes the percolation of devices, right? More people have the disease, more technology, right? Now we're talking about tens of thousands of apps that monitor or treat or, from that point of view. And naturally, right now, the market for devices alone in 2023 was estimated at $30.3 billion, right? Think of the impact the standard will have on cybersecurity and information security just for one therapeutic segment of the market. How many people it can help safeguard?
It's massive.
Right?
It's massive.
And that's when you think about standards, when people think standards are boring. No. This is a perfect situation where a solution can actually help patients and actually help the manufacturers as well. And I think this is what we have to think about when we talk about these kinds of things. So that's one example of a standard in cybersecurity. We're about to release another one that's going to get published at the end of the year, and that's IEEE P2933, which is clinical Internet of Things, data and device interoperability with TIPS, and TIPS is Trust, Identity, Privacy, Protection, Safety, and Security.
I love all the words there. I just have to remind people that they're listening to Health Stealth Radio, broadcasting from the shadows of patient and enterprise cybersecurity on Healthcare Now Radio and Chime's Digital Health Insights Network. Could you just do one thing before you go? We had a question from our quote unquote studio audience. What does IEEE stand for?
Oh, come on. Well, you know, some people call it, IEEE, right? But the IEEE, it's been around for 100 years. Well, actually more than 100 years. We are a global organization. We have, over 450,000 members in more than 150 countries. So the IEEE, which most people say IEEE, but we say IEEE, is the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers.
Oh yeah, it's a standard. It's renowned. So I got to ask. We have about 2 minutes left. It always goes way too fast. So no interview would be complete without mentioning something about AI or generative AI, and in terms of the work you're doing. And I know you've been on the vanguard of that. So tell me a little bit about the convergence of this work you're doing on cybersecurity and all the other crazy work you did on Swarm AI and Federated AI and all those cool things that I got really excited about when we first talked.
Swarm AI. I like Swarm AI. We actually, I lead the practice on healthcare and life science technologies, and we have other practices at the IEEE SA, and one of them is called on foundational technologies. And that's really looking at not the technical discipline of these actual technologies, and they have a huge area of cybersecurity and AI. But specifically from the healthcare perspective, AI is really big now, and we're seeing different deployments for threat modeling, right? This is exactly what we're seeing, especially we're actually looking at developing a potential standard in AI and risk assessment for clinical trials. So we're seeing like this percolation go up. So IEEE actually has an interesting standard around generative AI, and it's called, again, IEEE P7018, and it's called the Standard for Security and Trustworthiness Requirements in Generative Pre-trained Artificial Intelligence AI Models. So that's pretty like groundbreaking right there. And whenever I say a P for everybody, a P in front of a title, that means that it's a project and it's not actually published yet. So the group is working on it right now, but this is what they're addressing.
Did you get generative AI to make that name up?
No, I don't think it works that way. I always ask how they make up the numbers. I never get a straight answer. I don't think it's a standardized approach, no pun intended here. But I think this is a really, I think it's just some of the things. But we also have, like I said, we're looking at cybersecurity across many different areas. So I think we can look at it. But I think AI and cybersecurity is going to be the next thing, because from this predictive modeling and threat modeling and assessment and identifying abnormalities and all this other stuff, I think that's where we're going to see pretty much the growth.
Well, we're gonna bring you back to talk about that part, because we're only on chapter one on this, and we've got to have a chapter two for the AI part, which I know you're so well versed in. Unfortunately, like things like this, we never have enough time. We're at the end of our time for the program. I can't thank you enough, Maria, for coming in, being a friend, and we'll look forward to the next episode, where we combine some of the other work that you're doing with the cybersecurity stuff. It's really good stuff.
Thank you so much. You know me, I get very, very excited. It's like my soapbox. So I'm glad we had this
I
chance to
know. I
talk
mean,
about this.
we didn't have you on camera, but I know it, being the Italian that you were moving your hands as you were talking
Oh, you
about
see, you know me so well. There you
this.
go.
I'm one of them myself, so I know it well. It's Jeanette. It's Jeanette. Okay, all good. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today in the shadows for this episode of Health Stealth Radio with Frank Catita. If you like the program, please be sure to share your comments on our social media sites, or feel free to contact us with suggestions for new and stealthy show themes. We look forward to welcoming you again for our next broadcast. In the meantime, stay safe out there.